Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 23 of the AEW Dynamite / NXT Potpourri Mashup. I am your host and humble guide, Keela Cash. Thank you so much for joining me as week 35 of WrestleSoaptopia continues. Happy Thursday morning, afternoon, and evening to you all. It's a busy week in the worlds of WWE and AEW continues, and we are 3 days away from Clash of Champions Gold Rush airing live on the WWE Network at 7 EST, and there will be a special prediction show dropping tomorrow morning right here on WST with extra special guest co-host from the wacky world of wrestling and his rewriting WWE YouTube show that basically reimagines WWE storylines and matches via video game form through the 2K series of WWE games that have dropped over the years. He just recently wrapped up 2K15. We'll jump into 2K16 very soon to launch a whole new season where all things ultimately end at WrestleMania, which is very appropriate. So I'm very excited to have fellow wrestling fan and podcaster Scott Tinsley from Down Under on the show tomorrow as we get ready for Clash of Champions this Sunday on the WWE Network. And I can safely say that the work Scott has been doing via the YouTube channel in terms of cohesively putting together a storyline has been much better than what we got this past Monday on Monday Night Raw. Just saying. And it's only fair that I get this level of levity out of the way as I really get serious regarding last night's episodes of AEW Dynamite and NXT as the Wednesday Night War continues. And last week I thought it was a 1-2 punch of great wrestling across the board. Both shows super strong. This week I felt as if both shows took a step back and there were outside forces at play. And for the first time in a few months, I have to utter the words COVID outbreak. And that has impacted not only WWE in recent days, but AEW apparently, CMLL. And you're going to notice some changes on television, that you're going to see people missing in action and you're going to wonder what's going on. And some answers you'll get, some answers you won't get. But I'm here to tell you right now that watching last night's shows, it was apparent who made the show and who didn't. And it was glaringly apparent on last night's NXT that felt like a ghost town, that the people that would usually make up the crowd inside a Full Sail, no one was at ringside behind those barricades last night. They piped in some crowd noise, thank goodness to add some life, but you can tell it was dead silent in that building during those matches, and they had to pipe in that noise to add a bit of ambiance to the occasion. And it was very eerie in a lot of ways. It went back to those early days of NXT before the crowds were allowed in the building. It was that dark, dank setting of you had people showing up and showing out in certain matches, but it was still that sterile environment of lifelessness. I felt like I was back in March and April, and it was a hard show to watch. I love the main event, but gosh, that environment was definitely lacking last night due to the presumed outbreak at the PC. And we had Wade Barrett not there last night, Vic Joseph absent as well. Tom Phillips had to fill in along with Beth Phoenix doing commentary from home to really fill up those 2 hours, which says a lot. There's no speculation, but you can presume whatever you like. We definitely see people that are key pieces to this show not present for whatever reason, and you can kind of put two and two together. But I'm not Nancy Drew, and until we get definitive word from someone in WWE, that would be great. And the same rule applies for AEW. I know for a fact that Lance Archer has COVID-19 because he said so on social media, and Jon Moxley had to say, well, the title will be on the line tonight. It's live TV, folks. We got to roll with the punches. And he was very honest about his diagnosis, and he let everyone know that he's doing well and he'll be back soon. And I wish him the very best in his recovery, as well as his family staying well at this time, which is so important. There are people that are key pieces to this show that were not present last night. And it's concerning because we were aware of a second wave coming of COVID-19. And because numbers are going down in certain areas of this country, they're going up in other parts. When you're doing tapings every other week or for WWE every single week, in some cases, unless you're NXT and you're taping every 2 weeks, then you can get lax in how you go about your everyday life. This ain't the time to be lax. It is time to do what you're supposed to do, and that is be responsible and know when you're coming to a place of work, you're not only there to protect yourself, but everyone else around you. So what you do socially, be very careful. Don't put yourself or anyone else in jeopardy. And that has been my sticking point. This is not a game. This is not something that you should take lightly. I don't take it lightly in my everyday life. And I've been very upfront regarding losing someone to this virus earlier this year. And it would have been this person's birthday today, actually. So I take it very personally when you're not doing the smart thing of masking up, washing your hands, and staying 6 feet apart or more from people in intimate settings. Those are lessons we should know by now. And in wrestling, I have had very mixed feelings about shows running. I thought if you bank a lot of shows in advance, people would get to stay home with their families longer and quarantine, but now you're moving out and about more and more. But if this continues in the weeks to come, and I know AEW is in a more sticky situation due to having to tape and do live content every other week to make sure they're not in violation of their contract at Warner Media. But if you have to create a quarantine bubble in Jacksonville to make sure, hey, you stay in here, it's too much travel back and forth, then so be it. The same goes for WWE as well. It's hard to police people, but we see it done in MLB, in the NBA, in the NFL, in the NHL, that you might have to put restrictions on what you can and cannot do outside of normal work hours in terms of socializing, in terms of going to restaurants, going to bars, going to super spreader events that is going to do more harm than good. And you bring that back into the WWE bubble and there's another implosion. And we're back at square one. We're back where we were in March and April with Skeleton Crews. And at this stage in the game, you should know better. And thank goodness both companies are testing more to catch these cases, isolate, and rejuggle your shows accordingly. And you can tell there was some rejuggling last night. And the rejuggling will continue in the weeks to come because it's going to look very different. And hopefully there are some foresight in the weeks to come to ensure that these shows stay on track. But we are verging towards where we were in the very beginning of this thing with nobody in the crowd. And you're stuck with people that can't travel extensively due to high community spread of this virus. And I don't want that rolled back because you should know better by now that you are personally responsible for your actions. You should know better. That's the key. If they're testing, you should know better about what you're doing. If this is thrust upon you, that's more understandable because you can't control what you come in contact with if it's secondhand. And then you happen to catch it and you stop yourself from spreading by staying at home, which is such a smart thing to do. But if the performer is actually engaging in shit they have no business engaging in, like a Spring Break 98, that's my phrase I use when you're going wild and out, when you're not supposed to, then yes, you are responsible for being a dumbass and then spreading it to other people. That's what you shouldn't do. And as performers, 6-7 months in, you should know now. And here's another hard lesson. Thank goodness for tests. We can snuff it out, but it's very apparent when people are missing and the flow is off and you know people should be there, but they're not. And I would love more transparency from the wrestling industry when outbreaks do occur, because I don't want names per se, but I love that reassurance from the NBA or the NFL telling me 0 positive tests have come back. Everyone is cleared from the latest batch of tests before play. That's the most comforting feeling as a fan because you don't have to worry about everybody doing what they love to do. As a wrestling fan, I want that same reassurance. Give me 0% positivity before you do your matches on television. Give us that clearance to say, okay, everyone is good to go and there are no worries. If there is an outbreak, just say it. Be honest and just reaffirm that you're testing your asses off and you're doing your best to protect everyone by providing a safe environment. I don't want the sugar-coated WWE response of, we care about our fans and we created a Thunderdome. No, I want you to say we take the health and welfare of our performers very seriously. And that is the biggest message we send to our fans out there that engage in this product. And the same can go for AEW as well. Now, they have been very forthcoming in certain cases of people being in contact with folk and saying they have been quarantining themselves out of respect for everyone else on the crew, which is awesome. But now we're noticing people not being there. We're counting people on both hands. So now, since you connected with the NFL in a lot of ways, you take that same measure and say 0%, or there was a minor outbreak and so and so and so and so is unavailable this week, just to reassure fans, because a guessing game drives everyone crazy. It drives me crazy. I'm sure it does for you, the listeners, as well, because you don't want to be Sherlock Holmes or Nancy Drew to try to figure out who's well, who's not so well, who's there, who's not there. Just give us clarity. That's what I want, reassurance that what I'm watching is safety protocol at its best. I watch my soaps and they're back in session as well, and I hear all the actors and actresses from their various shows saying that they appreciate the company and the sets for putting in the proper protocols to protect everyone. I want that same reassurance from the wrestling companies as well, to not only satisfy their employers, who are the most important, but the fans as well, who are wearing their asses off over people to make sure they're doing okay, because they're doing this for our entertainment, and I don't want people getting sick or hurt because you want to put on a show for us. No, put on a show that is safe for everyone, for the performers and for the fans who can feel good about watching it. It should never be a tedious exercise in viewing wrestling. And that's how it felt last night for both shows. It felt like I was back in the early spring and going through some serious shit. And that is not the feeling I want to have heading into the fall season. But here we are. So hopefully the testing protocols continue to hold up. And most importantly, more transparency from everyone when it comes to test results coming in every single week. There is no greater breaking news story than everyone tested negative. Great news. And we can keep it pushing. And that was the lead story. And another sad story was the passing of Joe Laurinaitis that took place yesterday morning. It was a tragic news story that was already bringing about a bad day of news with the passing of Gale Sayers as well, legendary running back for the Chicago Bears. So two shitty news stories breaking at the same time yesterday morning. So rest in peace to Gale Sayers and Joe Laurinaitis, who is the brother of John Laurinaitis and the son of James Laurinaitis, a former NFL player that played for the Rams. And I followed his career over the years as well. And his dad was very proud of his son. And who can ever forget the power of the Road Warriors, Animal and Hawk? And may they ride together in heaven. Tragic news, compounding everything with COVID. So hopefully today will be a better day in terms of less terrible news for the industry and for the sports world. So may Gale Sayers and Joe Laurinaitis rest in power and in peace on this Thursday morning. And with that, let's make that tough but needed transition to last night's AEW Dynamite, which aired live from Daily's Place Amphitheater in Jacksonville, Florida. And we have things kick off with Joey Janela and Sunny Kiss versus the debuting Miro in the ring and Kip Sabian. And this was a mess, to put it lightly. This was a mess. Sunny Kiss was the highlight for me. I thought he looked great, but everyone else, with the exception of Miro and his enormous traps, didn't look so great. Miro was in great shape. He threw some great kicks and had some great power moves, but then he came up a little limp on the outside. He was favoring his knee at one point, and I thought something terrible had happened. And Joey Janela tried to take out Kip Sabian with a forearm, and that went kind of wacky as well. And then there was a dive that Janela did to Miro, and he completely missed and almost got dropped. And a bad camera cut all that sloppiness on display. Sunny Kiss tried to keep things together, but ultimately he got taken out with a kick to the head followed by the accolade by Miro to get the submission victory. And this was a nice finishing sequence for Miro to end the match on a high note, but the body of the match was not very good, with the exception of Sunny looking strong along with Miro and his power spots. And hopefully that is not a serious knee injury. And it was a very good sell job, or just a minor tweak that did not hamper the rest of the match, as he did finish things on a high note. Next up was Hangman Adam Page versus Evil Uno from the Dark Order. And as I mentioned, there were some key people missing from the Dark Order, such as Stu Grayson, but not speculating, but when we don't see folk, your mind has to go there. So hopefully he is all right. And we had Kenny Omega on commentary once again. And there was an interesting little nugget he revealed, that these matches, whether it was against Kazarian or Evil Uno last night, these were supposed to be tag team matches that Hangman wanted with Omega. It was supposed to be Kazarian versus either Christopher Daniels or Scorpio Sky, and Evil Uno versus Stu Grayson. So apparently Omega is out of the tag team business, but he's not afraid to throw shade at Hangman for maybe needing some help in a certain moment and, you know, not being able to do it on his own. But he proved his former tag team partner wrong again, as he got the pin on Evil Uno with a buckshot lariat for the 1-2-3. The actual match was solid. It was a little too cutesy for my taste, as Evil Uno was using the referee to deliver kicks to Hangman Page and lounging on the turnbuckle and just being an ass in a good way. But in this case, it was a bit too cutesy for my taste, as last week's match against Kazarian was a much better showcase for Hangman Page, but he got the win, which is most important at the end of the night, as Omega did not brush off Hangman outright, but he did not celebrate with him as his segment came to an end. Next up was the TNT Championship match featuring Orange Cassidy versus the champion, Mr. Brody Lee. And I thought this was an 80-20 match in favor of Mr. Brody Lee, as he whooped on Orange Cassidy from the opening bell. He got jumped on by members of the Dark Order at ringside, and Brody Lee just tossed him around like a rag doll. And at one point, Orange Cassidy was like a sack of oranges, very limp and lifeless in the ring. And every time Mr. Brody Lee tried to get up Orange Cassidy for the discus lariat, Orange Cassidy would fall down. He tries again, he falls down. Third time, Orange Cassidy is selling his ass off and tries to roll up the big man for a 1-2-3, and then Orange fires up. He makes a great babyface comeback. He drills Mr. Brody Lee with a tornado DDT followed by several penalty kicks for good measure, does a floating DDT from the top rope for a near fall. And he really made the comeback of the evening for me. Took out everyone from the Dark Order as John Silver tried to do a belt shot to Orange Cassidy on the outside, ducked all of the Dark Order minions, got back in the ring, avoided another discus lariat, but got caught ultimately with the powerbomb followed by a discus lariat from Mr. Brody Lee, as Lee retained the TNT Championship in a pretty damn good match down the stretch. Post-match, well, we had a return that no one saw coming, as Cody, with black hair, his natural hair color, on full display, wearing this really sleek black suit, he went down to the ring with a mission to whoop ass, and Brody Lee magically disappeared. But he got the Dark Order minions hitting cutters and putting them in figure fours, as he sent a message he's back and he wants that TNT Championship. And he had these really cool bedazzled loafers, and you're putting a dude in a figure four, you better work, Cody. You better work. A great return. The presentation's on point. He's more of this Dark Knight character that has been changed after the beatdown, and I'm here for it. It's time to give Cody a new coat of paint. He's been the American Nightmare for well over a year with the blonde hair, and I have forgotten what he looks like with dark hair, and he looks very good, so kudos to him. But let me recall the highlight of the night in terms of promos. And it shockingly came from Mr. Brody Lee backstage, as he admonished Cody for letting his brother Dustin lay down for him, letting his wife take licks for him, and saying that she's a thirst trap on Instagram who's calling Brody Lee daddy. Like, you need to get your priorities in order, because you have people fighting your battles and you should be fighting them yourselves. And he presents his dog collar and he wants to wrap it around Cody's neck and just conceal that ugly ass tattoo on his neck, which is the biggest heel in wrestling at this point, and he challenges him to a dog collar match for next week, but he needs Cody's answer in a week's time to set that up at a future date. And I was blown away by Mr. Brody Lee. I thought he cut the promo of his career in a backstage setting, and that is not an easy thing to do when you have Eddie Kingston on the same show calling out Jon Moxley as he challenged for the AEW World Championship during the main event. And I thought Kingston did a great job saying that Jon Moxley was a sellout by becoming a sports entertainer, because they were cut from the same cloth at one point working the indie scene and really using their blood, sweat, and tears to make it. But when he made it to the big time, Kingston stayed in the indies. He scrapped and clawed with the Warriors, with the Outcasts, and the Outlaws of this business. And so it would give him no greater pleasure than to beat the man who sold his soul to the devil. And I thought that was an awesome promo to kick off Dynamite after Miro got his victory on Sunny Kiss and tag team action. But here comes Mr. Brody Lee, and he cuts a fire promo on Cody and his entire family, and you have to take notice of that. So Eddie, my dear, you came in a close second in the promo department, because Mr. Brody Lee won the night, and I was very impressed with his performance in the ring and on the mic to set up a presumed dog collar match against Cody, probably and most likely at the anniversary show on October 14th. But we shall see. And speaking of anniversaries, Chris Jericho's 30th anniversary in the wrestling business, can you believe it, is going down on October 7th on the next Live Dynamite on TNT. And I can't wait for that. But to play off what happened a few weeks ago between MJF and Chris Jericho, we had the Mutual Admiration Society of both guys heaping praise on each other. But then they said, "You called me a loser." And then they covered up by saying, "No, I called the limo driver a loser. No, I called Tony Schiavone a loser. I love you, Christopher. I love you, Maxwell." So now they're back to being the best of friends, and we know they're both full of shit, as this feud is going to happen one day in the very near future, and I cannot wait for that, as Chris Jericho continues to elevate the youngsters from Orange Cassidy to MJF to now next week's match against Isaiah Cassidy from Private Party. So Chris Jericho is giving back and trying to put shine on the future, but the money match down the road will be him and MJF. It's like looking in a mirror from where he was 15 years ago, wearing the scarf and being an asshole and really feeling his oats in that moment. But I will say something I thought about late last year during the early days of Dynamite. MJF is great, but here's the thing. It's impressive to stay in the same ring as Chris Jericho and not get overshadowed, but Chris Jericho's greatness on the microphone should never be underestimated. When he's on, he is absolutely dynamic. And I felt there was a couple of times during their in-ring promo segments that Chris Jericho eclipsed MJF, because he's a seasoned vet. And you have a 20-something that's very good, but not at that level yet, but he's going to get there. But the fact you can hang with Chris fucking Jericho is a sign that you're here to stay, not only on the mic, but in the ring as well. And this is like grooming for the next generation. I'm here for it, but that's the danger. You're with a seasoned legend, a chameleon that's done it all. And MJF, hopefully he will learn to become that chameleon and have that longevity as a true game changer for the next 25 years, as he proclaimed in his promo a few weeks ago on Jon Moxley. So here's hoping he does that, because I think he can if he stays committed and he stays willing to grow and learn. And I believe he is a think tank for being better. And I cannot wait to see what him and Jericho cook up in the weeks and preferably months to come. Next up was our main event segment of Jon Moxley versus Eddie Kingston for the AEW World Championship. It was a tough match because the original main event was Jon Moxley teaming up with Darby Allin and Will Hobbs versus the Murder Hawk, Lance Archer, Ricky Starks, and Brian Cage. But unfortunately, Lance Archer tested positive for COVID-19 and he is quarantining at home at the moment. So that match is scrapped, and hopefully we can revisit it at a future date. But the main event in its place, with Eddie Kingston being very valid in the fact that he was not eliminated from the Casino Battle Royale a few weeks ago at All Out against Jon Moxley for the title he covets the most. This was a good brawl, a lot of hard chops going both ways, some brawling on the inside and outside the ring. But this was a pretty obvious outcome, as Moxley dropped Kingston with a power driver and Kingston tried to cover with a power bomb, ultimately got caught with a bulldog choke in the middle of the ring, and he had no choice but to submit as Moxley retains the AEW World Championship. It was a nice brawl. I thought Kingston's performance against Cody Rhodes a couple of months ago was better, but in a makeshift spot in a match we did not foresee in this moment, I thought both men held up their end of the bargain quite well. And at the end of the night, we had an ambush attack courtesy of Lucha Brothers, Pentagon Jr. and Rey Fénix. No Butcher and the Blade to be found during this closing segment, as we had the makeshift attack of Ricky Starks on Darby Allin as he delivered a wicked spear on Darby Allin. It was very Goldberg-like, and I'm not even exaggerating. That's how great the spear was. And Will Hobbs came down there delivering spine busters. But ultimately, the numbers game got the best of the baby faces as Eddie Kingston, Pentagon, Fénix, and Ricky Starks put the stomp on everyone. And I love the shot of Ricky Starks taking the skateboard and just slamming it into Darby Allin's neck and throat area for good measure as the show went off the air with the heels standing tall at the top of the hour. It was an interesting way to end the show, but I felt it was very makeshift because of the circumstances, but it did give the heels a night to shine to build up next week's show of Ricky Starks versus Darby Allin, and that should be a phenomenal match of two guys going out there beating the hell out of each other. That is going to be a match of the night candidate. Also on tap is Chris Jericho versus Isaiah Cassidy. And FTR introduces a Brush with Greatness match weekly as they will challenge SCU. And if SCU beats them, then they will get a future shot at the tag team titles. At SCU will be the combination of Kazarian and Scorpio Sky, but if they are unable to beat FTR in a 20-minute time limit, then FTR will collect the winner's purse, because once you have a Brush with Greatness and lose, why should you get paid for coming in second? So that was a wise strategy by them, and they are building up to a future match with best friends Chuck Taylor and Trent. And I'm looking forward to that in the very near future, as well as the Young Bucks continue to sulk backstage as Matt Jackson destroyed Tony Schiavone's phone as he asked the hard-hitting questions during a backstage interview. And at this point, when FTR is clearly the go-to feud heading into full gear in a month and a half's time on pay-per-view, I don't want to have two quasi-heels going at it. So the Young Bucks being pretentious dicks is not a good move at this point when you want a clear-cut face team and a heel team going at it for the AEW World Tag Team titles. So hopefully they course correct at some point, because I love the Bucks, but when you're being disrespectful to referees and backstage interviewers, it does make rooting for you harder to do, and you're supposed to be the faces in this situation because you were rightfully wronged, but no need to take out innocent people like the referees and the backstage interviewers. And Tony's phone did nothing to you, Matt, so pay the man and put it in his hand and not on the floor, okay? As for the rest of last night's episode of Dynamite, it was okay. This felt like a step back from the last couple of weeks, as they benefited from two strong shows, with the Fallout show from All Out airing live on Dynamite a few Wednesdays ago, followed by the outstanding parking lot fight between best friends and Proud and Powerful Santana and Ortiz last Wednesday in one of the best bell-to-bell Dynamites since the pandemic started. And this week, we're back to that live setting of things sounding not quite alive in certain spots, and it really was apparent during the Akira Shida, Thunder Rosa versus Ivelisse and Diamante tag team match, with four good workers and Thunder Rosa being super popular as of late, but you could not tell through that crowd because it was dead silent for most of it, which was a shame. But it felt like the show once again was out of rhythm, and they had to undergo some rewrites due to Lance Archer's COVID test results coming back positive, which is a shame, and people not being available last night, which was very apparent as well. So they did what they could. They put together a pretty solid show, but it felt lacking in terms of heat at times and sloppiness in certain matches as well. But you did set up a good show next week with some quality matches on tap, and that should be good, as taped shows are usually better 1 week later on TNT, but we shall see. Briefly moving on to NXT on USA, which emanated per the usual from Full Sail University in Winter Park, Florida, and this was dystopia. As I mentioned earlier in the show, that you can tell something went down in terms of COVID, as no one was at ringside during these matches to add noise. It was all piped in, and that was eerily apparent during the Battle Royale to crown the number one contender for Io Shirai's NXT Women's Championship at TakeOver next Sunday on the WWE Network at 7 EST. And this was a menagerie of people I've never seen before, with the seasoned vets mixing for good measure. And the highlights were Rhea Ripley and Raquel Gonzalez taking out people left and right, and they took themselves out. And I thought that minimized their power in that moment. But if they're building up a big hoss match between the two, I'm all for it. As long as the end game before the end of 2020 is Rhea Ripley back as NXT Women's Champion, then we don't need this throwaway takeover as a way to crown her as the champ once again against Io Shirai in the most perfect scenario of all. But we shall see about that. Kacy Catanzaro channeled her inner American Ninja Warrior as she avoided elimination a couple of times thanks to an assist from her tag team partner, Kayden Carter. But she ultimately got eliminated by Dakota Kai, as she got nailed with a kick right in the corner as she got knocked out of the ring officially. It came down to Shotzi Blackheart, Candice LeRae, and Dakota Kai. And Shotzi Blackheart took out Dakota Kai. It was down to Candice LeRae, and Shotzi Blackheart had a good battle. And they had some great near out of the ring moments as they both tease going over the top rope, and the fight culminated on the steel steps as Candice LeRae monkey flipped Shotzi Blackheart on the floor to secure the victory and a shot at Io Shirai for the NXT Women's Championship at TakeOver on October 4th on the WWE Network at 7 EST. And I want what I got at TakeOver Toronto last August, and that is a great fucking match between Shirai and LeRae. And they had a television match last year as well, and it was not as good because it's television and you can't do what you want to do. But at a takeover, by all means, do what you want to do and have at it, preferably inside the Thunderdome in a big time atmosphere with people going crazy in the background and piped in noise to really amplify the moment. Because right now, I do not foresee a takeover taking place, a full sale, with nobody there to watch if this outbreak isn't contained by then. That would be a disservice to the ladies and to everyone else who's put in that work for this last minute event, but should be a good one nonetheless. Next up was Tommaso Ciampa versus Jake Atlas in a grudge match from a few weeks ago. And Jake Atlas came out aggressive, had some hope spots, but the outcome was never in doubt as Ciampa caught Jake Atlas, who was going for the Rainbow DDT, and he countered with Rillo's Bell, followed by the Fairy Tale Ending for the 1-2-3 to submit his aggressiveness since his return to NXT last month, which is good to see. And hopefully Jake Atlas has a bright future ahead of him despite eating another L last night. Next up was a random ass tag team match cooked up by Fandango, which is a sign of how serious this outbreak potentially is, but I digress, as we had the hodgepodge randomizer tag team of Roger Strong and Danny Burch teaming up against Fabian Aichner and Raul Mendoza from Legado del Fantasma. And the winner of this match would then have their teams face each other head-to-head, and the winner will move on to face Breezango for a shot at the NXT tag team titles. Yes, all of that is incredibly confusing, and it was so confusing Tom Phillips had to explain it twice during the segment, which tells you all you need to know about how wacky this was. But let me tell you something, Roderick Strong got this hot tag, and he was an unintentional hot baby face. He was on fire, dropping everything that moved in the ring. And Danny Burch held his own as well, as he caught Mendoza with a draping cutter to pick up the win. And now it will be Danny Burch and Orny Lorcan versus Roderick Strong and Bobby Fish at a date to be determined. And the winners will move on to face Breezango for the NXT tag team titles. It was a fun, random ass match, which speaks to the seriousness of this outbreak due to people not being there, but they made the best out of a very difficult situation. And I admire Roger Strong for that comeback he made, which was incredible down the stretch. Next up was Damian Priest versus Austin Theory one-on-one, and Johnny Gargano gave Austin Theory some tips backstage, saying, keep him low, grind him to your level, and if you soften him up before takeover, I won't forget it. And Austin Theory tried his best to soften him up, taking him down low and making sure he grounded him early on. But Damian Priest is a beast, striker extraordinaire. He held his own, delivered a razor's edge to Austin Theory on the hardest part of the ring apron, of course, before delivering the reckoning for the 1-2-3. Austin Theory, once again, the perfect tackling dummy, has some hope spots, but the outcome was never in doubt once again. But as Damian Priest was celebrating in the ring, Johnny Gargano had the last word with the super kick, as he will face Priest for the NXT North America Championship at TakeOver next Sunday on the WWE Network. It's a random match, yes, but if you go back to TakeOver 30 from a month and a half ago, Johnny Gargano and Damian Priest were the last two men fighting for the title, hanging high above the ring in that ladder match. So it does make sense, even though this entire TakeOver is incredibly rushed, which is a shame because it still should be a good show considering the talent involved. But a nice segment to forward a mixed tag team match next week featuring Io Shirai and Damian Priest teaming up against the Garganos, Candice LeRae, and Johnny Wrestling. And that should be a good one. And knowing how that would end, the heels will have the momentum heading into TakeOver, only to lose at TakeOver. Just saying. Next up was the Gauntlet Eliminator match featuring Kushida versus Kyle O'Reilly versus Bronson Reed versus Timothy Thatcher versus Cameron Grimes, with the winner moving on to face Finn Balor for the NXT Championship at TakeOver next Sunday on the WWE Network. And I thought this was a great main event that was missing people, whether it was PC trainees or an actual audience at Full Sail rooting on Kyle O'Reilly, Kushida, and Bronson Reed specifically, and booing the heels and Cameron Grimes and Timothy Thatcher, even though they are lovable in their own wacky ways as well. This was a great start with Kushida and Kyle O'Reilly grappling in the ring. It was a masterpiece on display. I love their work together. Bronson Reed added some more flavor to the proceedings. He is such a great big man. So agile on his feet, splashing everything that moved and really using his power in the best possible way to showcase both men at the exact same time, who were trying their best not to get knocked out. And as Kushida and O'Reilly were grappling with Bronson Reed, we had Velveteen Dream, who Oda received to Kushida from a few weeks ago. He takes him out with the Dream Valley Driver. He disappears, as this is no DQ, no disqualification, and that allows Bronson Reed to hit Kushida with the Tsunami Splash for the 1-2-3. I was sad, but I understood the storyline motivation. But hopefully, in a perfect universe, Kushida destroys Velveteen Dream, and I'm sure that will make most fans very, very, very happy. Next up was Timothy Thatcher, and he and Kyle O'Reilly are great technicians. I love the submissions they traded. Their grappling style was on point, and Bronson Reed trying to fight both men at the same time as he was delivering setons left and right until Cameron Grimes came out, and he delivered a crossbody onto Kyle O'Reilly with his hat still on, which is a feat in of itself. He puts the hat off, and then we had this great flurry of offense from all four guys that was so awesome and peaked at the right time. And Bronson Reed was a cherry on top as he did a dive onto everyone as the match went to commercial. From there, Bronson Reed tried to splash Timothy Thatcher once again, but Timothy moved out the way with a little emphasis on a knee lift to really block the impact, and Kyle O'Reilly countered with a knee to the back to pin Bronson Reed, and then he got Timothy Thatcher with a bridging pin for the 1-2-3 as well. But I love the spot prior to that, as O'Reilly had Cameron Grimes in an ankle lock and Timothy Thatcher had him in a sleeper, and Kyle had to let go because he was fading, but he got the pin nonetheless. Less moments later, which is pretty damn cool. And right after Kyle got the pin on Thatcher, Cameron went in with the cave in, and he thought he had the win, but Kyle got his feet on the ropes and the referee broke up the pin, and Kyle was able to fight, and Cameron Grimes was just perplexed. That wasn't the finish. He went for a standing Spanish fly on Kyle for a near fall, went for the cave in once again, but prior to him going for the finisher, Kyle did hit him with a dragon screw between the ropes, and that nicked the knee enough for Kyle to lock in the heel hook, and Kyle got the win via tap out as Cameron Grimes gave up immediately, and it will be Kyle O'Reilly going up against Finn Balor for the NXT Championship. Adam Cole and Roderick Strong celebrated with Kyle in the ring as Finn stared down Kyle O'Reilly by giving him the bullet gun club shot to end the show at the top of the hour. This was a very fun main event. Everyone looked great, and the right person won for me. Kyle O'Reilly is one of the most underrated performers in wrestling. He is amazing. He is a great wrestler. He's an amazing grappler. His mixed martial arts style is fantastic. And him and Finn are going to tear the fucking house down at TakeOver next Sunday on the WWE Network. And I'm happy for him. If he can break through as a single star, then by all means, let's do it. It's long overdue. Now, is this teasing the end of Undisputed Era? I do sense Adam Cole and Kyle being baby faces and Roderick and Bobby Fish being more on the hillside. We shall see. But it did not fall on deaf ears that Cameron says Adam was the champion in your group. You're nobody. You'll never be him. And that might allude to the future as well. But we shall see. A strong ending to a very depressing show to watch at times. I have to tip my cap to everyone that worked under really difficult circumstances. It's not an easy thing to do. It felt like we were back in March and April prior to people being brought into the buildings for the closed set tapings to add some atmosphere to the show. Hopefully everyone gets well soon and proper protocols are taken to ensure everyone's safety moving forward. Now is not the time to be lax. Now is time to be more aware of your surroundings and what not to do in certain situations. And that goes for AEW, that goes for CMLL, that goes for every promotion who's actively trying to put on a show. Don't go back to where you were 7 months ago. Be aware of what you need to do now in the moment and to do better. That's the key. We don't need more herky piecemeal shows like this that are barely scrapping by, but we gotta give the talent credit for doing what they had to do under the most difficult of circumstances. A shout out to them as the road to TakeOver continues and someone is returning to TakeOver on the 4th. I don't know who it is. I got a gripe saying there's a lot of paper champions walking around here thinking they're the man or woman, and we shall see who that is in due time. Hopefully it's a good name coming back. I really hope it's Samoa Joe in a perfect world, but we shall see. I'm not trying to offer teasers, but that's who I would want it to be. But fingers crossed. And on that note, this wraps up episode number 23 of the AEW Dynamite / NXT Potpourri mashup. I hope you enjoyed it. As always, you can follow me on social media at Lady Wrestling X on Twitter and on Instagram at WrestleSotopia. They can find me tweeting and gramming about these podcast shows that drop on the semi-daily, recapping Monday Night Raw, AEW Dynamite, NXT, and Friday Night SmackDown on Fox. Feel free to download past episodes on all of your favorite podcast directories, including episode number 1 of the Raw Verdict, recapping the fallout from the 2020 Warrior Rumble. So you know what to do. Search WrestleSotopia on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, Buzzsprout, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn plus Amazon Alexa, and Spotify. I'll be back tomorrow morning with the Clash of Champions Gold Rush Prediction Show with extra special guest co-host Scott Tinsley from the Wacky World of Wrestling YouTube channel. Until then, enjoy your Thursday. Stay safe out there and don't forget to wash those hands. See you later, boys and girls. Take care.